This podcast is intended for adult audiences only, and listener discretion is advised as we explore mature topics with a sex-positive and open-minded approach. So remember, the opinions expressed are personal and not professional. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Pineapple Express Podcast, your weekly dose of sex-positive vibes and open-minded conversations about swinging, sex work, and non-monogamy. Join us as we delve into the world of modern swingers, exploring relationships, pleasure, and empowerment. Each week, we will tackle controversial, sex-positive topics through the lens of a millennial swinger. Get ready to embrace the steamy and sensational journey ahead and ride along with us on the Pineapple Express. Welcome to the Pineapple Express Podcast. And of course, I'm your host, Kylie. And today is going to be a nuanced topic. It's different. It's unique. And it's about sex work. Okay. This podcast is a sex positive podcast. It's not just about swinging. Yes, I'm a swinger, but I'm also a sex worker. And actually what led me to learning about human design was through a sex work podcast. So the podcast was called Make It Rain podcast by Paige Cole. And this was like a couple years ago. And I think I talked a little bit about this on the last podcast I did on human design. So I promise you guys, I won't bore you with any more human design topics. I'm kidding. I'm probably going to have more spirituality type people on here, which if that's what you're into, great. If you're not, that's fine too, but I'm into it and this is my podcast, so fuck off. I'm kidding. but anyways, I have Samantha on the podcast. So she is a human design coach, a practitioner, all things human design, and was also a sex worker in the past herself. And she has her own podcast. So I highly recommend following her on Instagram. Everything will be on there in my show notes about Samantha. And if you want to learn more about her, she is just freaking awesome. I knew that we were going to connect when our first DM. So I do want to talk a little bit about human design and sexuality. I know that I talked about this with AC Brown a couple of weeks ago on my last podcast about this, but I want to talk about, you know, if you haven't already looked up your human design yet, go do that, because if you don't know what your human design is, none of this is going to make sense to you. And you're just going to be like, what the fuck is this lady talking about? But your human design chart, it's going to include a number of factors that are going to influence your sexuality, which has something to do with sex work. Sex work, sexuality, all that encompasses each other, right? But your type is going to determine how you receive and express energy. Generators are going to be the most sexual type, and they're the most designed to receive energy through their sacral center. And manifestors are also pretty sexual, but they express their sexuality in a different way and more a direct and assertive way. And projectors, like myself, are receptive to sexuality, but they need to be invited before they can fully engage. And we're going to talk about this in the strip club setting and why that's important. And reflectors are going to be the least sexual type, and they need time to reflect on the energy of others before they respond sexually. And I know one reflector, and I can say that that person was not the most sexual of people. So I can definitely attest to that. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Again, it's unique. It's different. Make sure that you open your mind and your heart to something new, something that you've never experienced before. And let me know if you guys like this podcast. Comment. Give me some sort of like recognition here that you guys like what I'm doing with the show. If you hate it, then be like, fuck you, Kylie, you suck. I'm never listening to this again. I want to listen to a better podcast. Well, I recommend there are tons of other bots. I'm kidding. But yeah, so enjoy. Here's a message from our sponsors. Thank you to the listeners who constantly listen. I love you guys. I see you guys. You guys are awesome. So before we dive into today's episode, I want to take a moment to talk about the incredible support that I receive from all of my sponsors. As you all know, creating this podcast is a passion of mine, but it's also an endeavor that requires a lot of time and effort and resources to keep this show alive so that I can give you guys the content that you deserve on a weekly basis. So thank you to my sponsors so that we're able to focus on, you know, this educational content. And I love that they help cover the costs associated with hosting services, equipment upgrades, and sometimes fueling my coffee addiction to keep my creative juices flowing. I'm kind of kidding there, but not really. But more than just financial support, our sponsors are companies and brands that I truly believe in. They offer products and services that I think that you guys, my very valued listeners, can benefit from. And I would never endorse something that I didn't truly believe in myself. So when you hear me mention our sponsors, know that these shout outs aren't just a formality. They're a testament to the effort that we bring to this show and the ears of this episode and all of my episodes. So by supporting them, and you're supporting us and you're supporting this podcast in a real way. And this is so that we're able to have these conversations, share stories, and of course, build community. So stay tuned for our sponsor segment right now. And, you know, check out all these unique promo codes, discounts, and offers that they've provided exclusively for you guys. It's a win-win. You get a great deal and you're also directly contributing to the longevity of my podcast. So as always, thank you guys for listening and a massive thank you to all of my sponsors. Hey, Upside Down Pineapple people. Join the millions of couples enjoying amazing sex with Promescent. I personally love the variety of products they offer, and their aloe-based lube is the only lube I've ever used that doesn't throw off my pH. Brad loves their delay spray, which is clinically proven to help men last longer in bed. Their products have a 60-day money-back guarantee and free shipping on orders in the U.S. over $10. Their shipping is discreet and private, which is perfect for us in the swinger lifestyle. Make sure that you go to www.promescent.com/Kylie for all your discreet sexual health needs. My link is in the show notes. Promescent helps you live your best upside-down pineapple life. Introducing the Sultry Vixen, your one-stop shop for all your sex work and rave wear needs. Whether you're hitting the pole or the festival scene, the Sultry Vixen has got you covered. From dance shoes to box outfits, custom dance outfits, and lingerie to vibrant festival outfits, they've got the perfect gear to make you shine. Stand out with their neon rave accessories and all of their costumes that will take your festival experience to the next level. And they also carry men's and plus sizes. They are a family-owned and operated ravewear / dancewear shop located in Riverside, California. The quickest way to reach them is directly through their Instagram. Visit thesultryvixen.com today for the hottest trends in dance and rave fashion. Dance more and glow more with the Sultry Vixen. Hey there, Pineapple Expressers. Are you seeking a splash of excitement in your dating life? Well, get ready for triple, quadruple, or even an orgy of fun with 3Fun, the leading dating app for open-minded singles and couples. Are you interested in exploring the swinger or polyamorous relationships? Maybe you're a couple looking to add some variety to the bedroom. Whatever your preference, 3Fun is designed to connect you with like-minded individuals who embrace open relationships in all forms. Dip your toes into the dating pool where judgment is left at the door and freedom of expression is the norm. With 3Fun, you'll discover a community that values consent, respect, and the pursuit of pleasure in all forms. As a millennial swinger, I love how user-friendly 3Fun is, and signing up is easy and discreet. You can customize your profile, set your preferences, and when you're ready to embark on your journey filled with thrills and connections, start sharing with other individuals, all in one simple swipe. Safety is the top priority for 3Fun. With private photo albums and the latest security features, your personal information stays just that, personal. You're in control of your experience at all times. So why wait for excitement to find you? Download 3Fun today. There's a link in my show notes and join the largest community where fantasies come alive. 3Fun, let your curiosity roam free, and who knows, you might just find that trio or that couple of chemistry you've been searching for.
anxiety can cause ED, like the kind you get while watching your partner with someone else. You're having the time of your life, yet are having stage fright. Most men in the lifestyle use prescription ED medication for this reason. Shameless Care should be your provider. Shameless is less expensive than other companies and has a 50-state network of physicians who are lifestyle friendly. Use coupon code CHIC, that's C-H-I-C, for $30 off. ShamelessCare.com.
All right, Pineapple Expressers. So I have a human design coach and a holistic health practitioner, and her name is Samantha Zagar, right? I said that correctly. Okay, perfect. Yeah. And then, so she's, like I said, a human design coach and a holistic health practitioner. And today we're going to talk about human design, which I know I just did a podcast on human design with this really awesome practitioner. Her name is AC Brown. And we talked more about swinging and non-monogamy, which I'm sure we'll get into that with this one. But this one's going to be more centered for like the sex workers. And, you know, it's more sex positive. So, Sam, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got your start in human design and what you know, where's that intersectionality with sex work, non-monogamy and human design for you?
Man, I feel like I could fill up a couple hours of my own podcast episodes with that answer. Let me see. A little bit of my backstory would be I got into human design about when the pandemic hit. I had a lot of different career experiences that felt like me giving guidance. I didn't know what being a projector was at the time, but I can look back in history and go, whether I was a hairdresser or working in a women's transition center, I was giving advice to people who were telling me what was going on in their life. I always wanted to take that in a more academic way, but I also don't like a lot of the red tape that comes with more, I don't know what the, like I'm gapping on a word here, but people are watching what you're up to. They ethically care that you're not gonna mess things up.
Right.
I wanted to be able to have, and I think you can relate to this, I wanted to be able to have conversations with people that might not be approved of by other people.
Right. So kind of the fringe of society type, you've just always had this like not rebellious, but just like the fringes of society, you know, where it's different.
And I'm very like, tell it like I see it. I'm very unfiltered. I don't necessarily fit very well in regulated places or super controlled places.
Same.
I made a bit of a deke at the last minute when the pandemic happened to not go to a certain kind of schooling because I didn't want the rules that came with the certificate at the end. And I'll be honest, things were kind of just crashing around me. Actually, everything was crashing around me. I didn't really know what I was doing for a career. I was in the middle of a transition. Human design got my attention, and I just started learning about it and sharing publicly about it on Instagram. One day, a man messaged me, and he had advanced paid me for 10 sessions through PayPal. I didn't have an offering. Like, there was no 10 pack. He just said, I want 10 human design sessions with you. Recognition, invitation, compensation. And it was like, the path of human design opened, but it still required me to bring everything else I had learned up to that. Like my systems, they might be health, or they might be human design, or they might be working with the body. Like I feel like there's so many different things that I have to add to the conversation. And you'll see this the more we get into sex and human design, because what I'm actually very excited about is places where they don't connect. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't, maybe that's not the right language, but like the fact that human design doesn't identify sexuality in someone, like mm-hmm. you're meant to be single, you're meant to be a swinger, you're meant to be open, you're meant to be monogamous, you're meant to identify as a man, you're meant to identify as a woman. Like that's not a part of human design, which is so cool to me. You can identify however you want, but there are very specific mechanics that will flavor how you will do certain things. If you're monogamous, it will look like this. If you're in partnership, it might look like this. That's really fun for me to explore.
And yeah, I find I found human design during the pandemic as well, and I just found it so fascinating. Can you kind of give an overview of what human design is, what it looks like? And you know, like I said, we did a podcast earlier in the month about human design, so we kind of got a little bit, but you tell us from, you know, in your words.
I think my favorite way to approach human design from a very practical place, because if I'm speaking to an audience that really doesn't know what we're talking about, we all have so many decisions to make throughout the day. What human design will give to you is a map of who you are. Honestly, to me, it's a mathematical equation being expressed in a graphic. Now, when you look at this, it's going to give you a few suggestions for how you're going to interact with the world around you. Strategy and authority are the core principles of human design. Strategy is how you engage with the world. Authority is your decision maker, your internal boss, in a way that says, it's not your daddy, it's not your government, it's not your religious leader. There's something in you that makes you your own authority. So human design is the best for me, in my opinion, why I like it and wouldn't not use it. It helped me know what to think about, what decisions to make. And so much of the stuff I used to think about or think I used to have to decide on isn't relevant to me, doesn't matter to me, isn't important to me. And it gives me so much of my mental capacity back before anything else. But if you're someone who wants to know how to make decisions as yourself and kind of protect who you actually are, human design is very good for helping you do that.
Yeah, I agree. And it changed the way that I worked. It changed the way that I interacted with people when I learned and it's very similar to, and I always say like, it's similar to astrology, but it's not actually astrology. It's more than that, but it's similar in the sense of like learning. It's not necessarily like you have to be like this exactly, you know, but it helps you get more of a framework for who you are. And that's what I really love about it. But I'm interested to hear kind of where you stand on like where it comes into like sexuality, because I know you talked a little bit about how like it doesn't actually tell you like if you're going to be bisexual or trans or like monogamous or non-monogamous, but like what does that look like for somebody's human design and their sexuality?
Okay, this is where I was excited to get to this part of the conversation, because there are pieces in the body graph that will describe aspects about you. So in the body graph, when you have a channel, that means you have two centers being connected by two gates. The channel of mating, the 59th gate and the sixth gate come together. Now, different gates have different qualities to them. The 59-6 is going to talk about people's sexual bonding strategies. So this is very cool. Like I'm a 6.1. Now, when you hear the point, we're talking about the line. Sixth gate, line one. When we're looking at the lines, they follow the profile lines for a thematic. So a 6.1 has a quality to it that is the same as a first line profile. So this researcher investigator, there's a security component. Now, in terms of the sexual bonding strategy, as a 6.1, I have pursuer or pursued. So there is this security built into my intimacy in terms of whether or not I will go after the person or I will want the person to come after me. That's a very cool piece of information to play with, but it's not the first piece of information I want to play with. The first thing I want to do is look at strategy and authority. So let's say somebody wants to get freaky with me. They're going to have to recognize me. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to invite me. They're going to have to compensate me in some way, make it worth my energy, help me recuperate the energy I'm going to spend. Now, if I've been invited, if my spleen doesn't freak out and go, this isn't safe, this isn't healthy, then I have the opportunity to go, nothing in my way here. Am I flirting with them? Are they flirting with me? How do I want to do this? Do you have either the 59 or the 6 in your profile?
So I have the 6.1, and then let me see. I don't think I have 59 though. I just have the 6.1.
If you had the 59, you would be the generator. So having the 6, this is the gate of friction, and you as well are also a pursuer or pursued. Do you notice that sometimes you're a little bit more aggressive sexually, and other times you're like, no, they need to come to me?
Yeah. I've always been like that, where I've always been the one who, if I really like somebody, I will pursue them, and I will want to continue dating them or whatever. But sometimes I like them doing that for me too. Or if they're very persistent about inviting me, like, then that shows me that, yeah, they're pursuing me. So I like that. But it depends on the person.
I also think it's really important to look at the mechanics between either the sacral center or the solar plexus center. Each center has different organ systems that it's attached to. The sacral center in the body graph, the organ systems it's attached to would be reproductive, ovaries and testes. So it's the generators who have a response to put their energy into something as an indicator that not only will it satisfy them, it will be something that helps them generate more energy. The generator or the sacral being is the core of what we think fertility is. Fertility is our renewable resource from the generator. Now, that would really mean that the core of sex, or at least the kind of sex that's here for reproduction, procreation, belongs to the generator. However, when we're looking at the solar plexus, this is going to appeal more to you because, on one hand, I've just said something that says you're not really a sexual being, being a projector. However, you're an emotional projector. Now, intimacy is very different from sex for the purpose of procreation. Intimacy really is vulnerability with somebody else. And the solar plexus is going to say, let's have our truth in confrontation. As in, let's be as vulnerable as we can and have communion over that. So there is a very different kind of sexuality that comes from the solar plexus.
And I don't have any like centered. I don't have like that solar plexus, which again, as a sex worker too,
You do.
I
You're an emotional.
do.
You have a defined solar plexus.
Okay, well, that's good news, because I thought as a projector, I did not. And that was like why I thought I was all over the place, because sometimes I feel like I'm all over the place with that, but that's good to know for me personally, for sure.
Don't have the sacral. So you will amplify the kind of sex that is for procreation, but your drive or your availability will be different. You will bring a different quality to sex. You will bring depth to sex. You're not, this is the thing, an emotional projector or someone who's non-sacral, you're not having sex to use up the leftover sacral energy that you haven't used that day. And most sacral people, if you're the kind of sacral person who is rolling over to your partner right before you go to sleep and you're like, hey, this looks like a good person for me to use that little bit of energy I have left so I can go to bed. The interesting thing is that other person might not be the kind of person that wants to take that energy on from you. Like, this is where I had the biggest lessons myself to learn in what I call deconditioning from sacral addiction. You know, my ex-husband, who I was polyamorous with, is a manifesting generator, and my son is a manifesting generator. So I was surrounded by generator energy. I didn't know what it was. I was amplifying it. And who I looked like as a sexual being at that point in my life is unrecognizable to who I am now.
Because you were able to have more of an understanding of how, and that I'm sure human design helped a lot with that.
Oh, human design is the only, it's truly the only reason. It was really, really strange for me to initiate polyamory in my marriage, end my marriage, have his whole family hate me for basically They thought I wrecked their son. They thought I took a good little boy and turned him into a dirty little boy.
Oh, same with me. I know. It's all my fault.
Yeah, you're the terrible one, right? Bad
Right.
influence. But the interesting thing is, as soon as we divorced, he's still polyamorous. I haven't been polyamorous once since leaving that relationship. And so part of what was really interesting was watching how differently I identified and thought about myself while I was constantly in aura with a sacral person, and in particular, a sacral person who used a lot of guilt around sex. If we didn't have intimacy incredibly regularly, it was a very big problem for us. It was like up until 4 in the morning crying, "You're not attracted to me." Like it felt like a lot of gaslighting in order to be in. Whoa, man, things have changed so much.
Yeah. And my husband's a projector, so I think that he kind of has more of an understanding. But I would definitely say, like, he is a projector, but we're very different in the sense, like, the way that we approach swinging and sexuality is very different. My husband enjoys swinging and non-monogamy because he enjoys the sexual aspect of it. And that's it for him. He is just one, he doesn't really care for feelings and emotions and intimacy and all that. And me, I care about all the above, emotions, intimacy, all of that. Like, I have to really, I consider myself demisexual. So it's really funny and it works for us because, like, I'm open-minded to his approach and he's open-minded to mine. But again, he is very much a projector. And we both are very much like go with the flow. We have to be invited into situations, specifically like swinger situations. So I want to ask, how can you utilize human design to enhance sexual experiences?
This is great because I can bring signature into this. If somebody approaches you through strategy and your authority is on board, the reward on the other side of this is your signature. As a projector, you will feel successful. A generator or manifesting generator will feel satisfied. A manifester will feel at peace. A reflector will feel surprised. So you can kind of look at the result you got out of your experience. I mean, it's a bit of an abstract integration. You're making sense of something after the fact. That can help you go into your next experience better. If you're a projector and you think, okay, I have to wait to be invited, but you see a hottie over there and you walk up and you're like, nice shoes, wanna fuck, and it doesn't go that well and you end up bitter at the end of it. It's like, okay, maybe I shouldn't initiate next time. Maybe I should wait for someone to come to me and see how that turns out differently.
Yeah, and that's I feel like that's specific in like a swinger situation. But I want to kind of like move it toward sex work because, I'm a sex worker, I'm a stripper, I'm a dancer. And so I was introduced to human design through a podcast of talking about specifically stripping and sex work and how as dancers, it's really important to know our human design because that's how we're going to make the most money in the club, right? So, for example, I am a projector. So, my energy is very sacred to me, especially if I'm, walking around the club and I'm going up to every single customer and it's just not getting me anywhere, right? But what I like to do is really use my energy, and I've learned this through human design, really, really use my energy and let people invite me into situations, whether that's a smile, whether that's a coming up to the stage and tipping me, whether that's another girl coming up to me and saying, hey, join me at this table with this guy, And that has changed the process of how I work so much different. And it's also the girls that I work with. I can't work with another projector, but I work really well because we both enhance each other's experience in the club, like with generators or manifesting generators, because they seem to be more, stronger and be able to get that sale, where I'm just like the one who kind of sits back and I'm the one who the guy really feels intimate and connected with. So it's that was learning all of that was very important for me. But I kind of want to get your take on how you think your human design can impact your work and sex work.
I really liked what you said about different subtle things that would get recognizing the invitation. Whether it's, I was going to ask you about eye contact. I was going to ask, do you notice if you look at someone a certain way, you can almost pull them to you to get your invitation? Projectors and eye contact, it is our most powerful tool. In theory, we shouldn't have to say anything. We can energetically seduce people to us. Now, if you're going to do sex work as a projector, you need a really, really good, like, aura cleansing routine.
Yes.
The gift of being a projector is that we are more, well, it's a gift and a curse. We are more easily conditioned than any other type. We are meant to be. We're meant to get near someone within their aura and basically absorb who that person is. Mm-hmm. And it's quite uncomfortable, especially if this person is in their not self theme. We're absorbing anger, bitterness, frustration from other people. And what we get is the ability to kind of read them and guide them with that information. You were really taking people in at such a level. Now, if you're doing that over and over and over and over again, what I have to say about that is your price better be high. You don't have the energy. You're not going to regenerate it the next day. You really have to buy your rest and recovery because you're a non-energy type. Mm-hmm. So you better charge the queen's ransom here because you have to be able to recover afterwards. You can't keep up with your sacral counterparts or coworkers.
Right. And I think that learning that was important. Also, the people who are, when you are taking on those auras and energies from people, you have to be really, really careful and know and trust your intuition. So when you, and for me, I can look at somebody or I can really just like feel their energy before I even, and I used to be the girl, right? Because I was like, I was always taught, well, you have to talk to everybody, right? And that is something that generators do, right? Or manifesting generators, like they talk to everybody because they have that sacral center. But for me, I couldn't do that. I have to be so careful. And I always used to look at girls, the ones that would like sit in the back and wait. And I was like, these girls don't care about making money. Like they're not, but I had to learn that and I have a really, really, really like strict energy like policy, right? Like I meditate before every shift and I sit down and I ground myself and I have my own room and I do a bunch of different rituals and cleanses and I do like weekly sound bath meditations. Like the list goes on and on. And this is the only way where I have found where as a projector, this job can be beneficial for me because without that, I get burnt out after one day. And that's the other thing too. Like the burnout is so much quicker. I can't work more than two shifts in a row without being extremely burnt out where for 3 days, like I'm sleeping, you know? And I think that learning your human design can really, really help you not only deal with the club and deal with like the customers, but deal with yourself and figure out what you need in this, because this is an energy job, like, and it's a sexual energy job. So people don't realize how important that sexual energy is, especially females. You know, it's a very female prominent type of job. And this goes for full service sex workers. This goes for strippers. This goes for online sex workers, because that can also, you know, impact how you deal with like OnlyFans, like talking to your fans and stuff like that. That can be really, really draining as well.
You make some very, very good points. And if I could go back to 19-year-old me and her full service, as you called it, sex worker stint, I would have had a real good sit down talk with myself about what my authority felt like. Mm-hmm. Being a splenic authority is this healthy? Is this healthy? And I can definitely look back at some of those situations and go, Sam, you were creeped the fuck out. There were huge red flags here. Why did you go to that place? Mm-hmm. I am, on one hand, incredibly fortunate that I did not have dangerous or harmful experiences. At the same time, I quit after 6 weeks, and I could sense this thing that if I didn't make a change, something bad was going to happen. Like, my luck was running out, at least in the way that I was doing that job. I was not going to continue to have the luck that I was having for very long. Mm-hmm. So I stopped. And I would say that this work across the board can be very dangerous. And in terms of taking advice for how to protect yourself or how to stay safe, we're not often shown what the thing is inside of us that is the answer for this. Like, we don't need someone else's guidance. God forbid I could get to a point of saying, like, I don't need the driver to know where I am and when to come get me because I didn't go to a dangerous place because I listened to my authority and it didn't put me in a bad spot. That being said, I'd like to have my authority and a bouncer driver, you know, right. I'd like to double the protection. Did like to, past tense. But knowing your authority is going to keep you so much safer, so much longer, and give you the power and confidence to go, no, I don't even know why that's a no. I just know it's a no. I know that feeling in my body. I respect it. I honor it. Next client.
Yeah. And that's where that's where I'm at. And I think, you know, I masked a lot of those feelings with alcohol and drugs. And that is something that is common in the industry, where we mask those feelings, especially as projectors, because I was like, well, you know, I'm not making money because I can't. And then, like, my energy center was all off. And so now that I've been sober for 10 months, I have way more of a concrete understanding of how that works. And, you know, you're talking about something a little bit more extreme than in a strip club. But when it comes to being safe, like, if I'm going up to a VIP room with a guy, you know, I have to know that I'm going to feel safe, like that I'm not going to fight with him over my boundaries for an hour. Like, yep. And that's what ends up happening if you don't know in your body those, like, I will feel it in my body. If I'm sitting there and if I'm talking to somebody and I just have that, I'm like, he's going to break my boundaries. I'm not even going to waste my time. The money is not worth it. The $100 for the 15-minute room where he's going to, you know, pull his dick out or do something that's against my boundaries and I'm going to have to walk out of the room. Like, I'm not even going to go there. Like, we're not. Yeah, no, no. And I can just tell in my body that feeling. So I wanted to ask, like, how or what advice would you give to someone interested in exploring their own sexuality or understanding human design and sexuality? Like, how could someone do that?
One of the things I like a lot about human design, and I'll tie this into why I didn't want to follow through with any type of psychiatry or counseling stuff. I didn't want the red tape. Human design does not have a moral stance.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that human design doesn't give two shits about whether you think something is morally right or wrong, or someone else thinks it's morally right or wrong. I would never say to anybody that sex work is wrong. I would only say if your authority says sex work is wrong for you, then it sure as shit is wrong for you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. That being said, so many people, when they're exploring these things, they're coming in with shame, with judgment.
So, yeah.
And
traumas from past experiences. Yeah.
I like to kind of let people know in advance, if you want to come into human design and play with this, you can honestly just check the shame at the door. It really doesn't matter. We're not going to say you're good at your design because you're monogamous or because you're polyamorous or because you're having sex a lot or not at all. Like, those things, they don't matter. If it came to you through strategy and authority, nobody else gets to say a damn thing about it. And I love that because it says we all get to be individual. We all get to be differentiated. What's right for me is right for me. And I'm the only person who gets to decide that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And that's, you know, because I think with different religions or spirituality factors, a lot of times we get so caught up in that shame cycle. And this is very common, specifically for women, or, you know, even men too. And this like relates to non-monogamy and sex work. It's everybody, and I always say this, everybody's ethics and morals and value system is going to look different because of their environmental, how they grew up, or, you know, that's going to look different for everybody. So it's really important to communicate with people what that looks like, because a lot of people would say like, well, you're a stripper and you show your boobs for money or whatever. Like, maybe they wouldn't do that, but I enjoy doing that, and I don't enjoy like showing off my body. That's not why I do this work. I do this work because there's a lot of very unhealed men, and the best place for those men to go is the strip club, because that's what they know, right? So they come in there, and whatever they need from me that night, whether it's they need therapy, quote unquote, right? Like, I'm not a therapist, but sometimes I end up being a therapist for them. Whether they just need some hugs and some love and some affection because either they're not getting it from home, or they're single and they don't have that and they just really need that in that moment. If they just need that positive, good energy, like, I have to figure out who I'm going to be that night and what I'm going to give to those people. But that's really why I do this work, is not because it's easy, because it's certainly not easy, but it's very rewarding if you allow it to be rewarding. And if you allow it to be, if you take that shame out of it and you look at it from, and that's not me looking at it from like, oh, this means it's good because I'm helping people. But like, men will always go into, and women too, will always go into strip clubs. They will always, sex work will always be a thing. It has
the
since
oldest profession.
Yes, it's the oldest profession, and it will always be a part of our world. Even if they take it out, right? If they outlaw it completely, it's going to be underground, because I feel that a lot of men really need that. And I'm saying men, but I mean a lot of people. It's mostly men, but a lot of people need that healing, and sex workers can provide that. That's my opinion.
I completely agree with you, actually. And when I had the experience of doing sex work, not only was I young, but I had nobody to talk to who wasn't judgy, who understood why I was doing what I was doing, which meant that there was not really anybody I could share the positive sides with. Everybody assumed that because, well, everybody just assumed it was a terrible job and I must be, you know, so abused, and I must hate myself, and I must be so damaged, and all of this stuff. And don't get me wrong, I can absolutely see how some of those experiences were a byproduct of that. But there were also, I would say half the experiences that I had, 90% of the time that I spent with the person, we were talking, and we were talking about deep personal things. They wanted someone to like have their arm around them. It was almost more like the girlfriend experience. Like,
yeah,
they want someone to talk to, they want someone to confide in. And then at the end, when they realize their time's almost up, it's like, oh, well, we should do that thingy. So it didn't last very long because it was at the end. And part of what I had to learn in the beginning, but two times I did it the first time, I walked into the room and I just started taking my clothes off because I had no idea what I was doing. I realized after the second time, I was not initiating from human design. I can see that now, but I was starting things. I was making the thing happen. If I realized don't take the control of that myself, be there, but kind of see what they actually even want first. You know, most of the time they wanted to talk. They wanted to talk the majority of the time I was there. And I felt like these were healing experiences for some of my clients, but I also felt like people thought I was crazy for saying that to them. Like, I was justifying what I was doing, but I truly believe that there was good, positive, therapeutic work that came from some of it. Not all of it, but definitely some of it.
Yeah. And I remember I had a conversation with one of my friends about this, and I said, yeah, and I've said this and to other dancers, and one of my friends was like, I feel like that's just kind of you justifying this work, and that's kind of like a baby stripper way of like justifying it. And I'm like, no, you have to understand the way that I interact with my clients is so different from how a lot of people interact with their, even my best friend who I work very closely with, like we will do rooms together. We, and she's a generator. So we work very differently. And for me, that's what works for me. And that's where I get fulfillment from my job. And I get really good clients, the clients that I want to keep. Or, you know, I have good experiences out of this where I feel good afterwards instead of, you know, in the beginning of doing this, I didn't feel good afterwards. I felt really bad. And I felt like, in a way, a lot of shame because I wasn't doing this from the right place. And now I feel like I am. And I feel like that was kind of baby stripper of me, right? Like where I didn't know this part of me. And now that I know this part of me, I'm making a lot more money. I'm making good quality experiences for everybody. And there are a lot of men who do come into these clubs and they're not, if they wanted sex, they would do that. It's so much easier to like go on Tinder. Like, look at how easy sex is now. You know,
I'm terrified of it personally. I'm in like such a different phase in my life now. I joke that like this is my celibacy time, but really celibacy is just a nice way of saying there aren't any invitations that I feel worthy of getting into bed with.
Right. And I feel like it's just so sex is now in 2024 in a very easy thing to get, and that's because of social media and all of, you know, all of these ways of connecting with people. If they wanted that, they would. Now there are people who do want that, right? They do come into the club and they're like, hey, I'll pay you whatever for this. But I think most of the people that go in there, really, they need something, and it's my job as the projector to connect with them and find out what they need so that I can give them the best experience possible. I am not that girl who walks up to every table and goes, do you want to go get a room? Do you want to? And I know girls who do that and they do that well and it works for them. But for me, I have to sit down and I have to get to know you and I have to understand what you're here for. What do you need from me? Mm-hmm. And go from there. But if you say to a guy, what do you need from me? They probably don't know what they need from you.
No.
Most likely not. So you have to like figure it out and pull that out of them. And then once you figure that out, then you can move along with the sale and get them and keep them in a room where you don't have to break your boundaries.
There are, I believe, 9 different ways that authority can show up in the body graph. The most dominant one on the planet is emotional, which is the solar plexus being colored in the body graph, which is what you have. These are the people who need time to come to clarity. So no matter who you are, manifestor, generator, projector, when somebody asks you about something, invites you to something, your perfect answer is always, let me get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get back to you. You never agree in the moment because you need a bit of time to go by so that you can go through different points in the wave so that you can get a more filled in picture on what you're actually agreeing to. If you're a generator with just the sacral defined, not the solar plexus, you would be a pure generator or pure manifesting generator. And you have a response in the now, moment to moment to moment, response in the now, as in don't take too long to think about it because you're getting in your head, you're out of your authority. Now, spleen is the fastest of all of them because it's borderline futuristic in a way that if you were to put a coin on a railroad track, that coin would vibrate before you would know that the train was coming. That's what the spleen is like. It can tell that danger is coming, that the threat is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So yours is always asking, do I have clarity on this? The sacral is going, do I have a response for this? Do I want to put my energy into this? Myself being splenic, it's, is this healthy or not? if the G center was the authority for a self-projected projector, you would be talking things out and you would go, does that sound like me? Does that sound like what I would do? If you're a mental projector, you're still soundboarding. Does that sound like what I would do? There's ego. It's very, ego has, not to confuse it with the motivation of desire, but it's very driven, like I want that or not, kind of, it goes for the thing. Yeah, we all have these different, reflectors. They have to wait a lunar cycle. The reflector has the hardest one by far. They got to wait a very long time. It's like solar plexus times a lot.
And I've actually known a reflector stripper, which is so funny because she's the only person I've ever met who is a reflector, because it's like, what, 1% of the population is a reflector. So they're very rare. Now, me and you, projectors, I want to say it's like 30%.
No, like 16 to 20.
Okay. So it, and then you have manifestor generators, and generators are like the most common, right?
70. Yeah.
70%. Yeah. So, but I've met a lot of projectors, which is in my son and my husband are both projectors, which is very interesting. I surround myself with those people, but I think they tend to be like the very, just people that I get along with that understand me, right? But I met this reflector, and she's no longer a dancer because it was so difficult for her. And it wasn't that like she, I think that she tried to be good at her job, but she just, she could not get a grasp on it. And I love her to death. She's an amazing human, but I kept telling her, well, you have to wait like these lunar, like you have to wait a lunar cycle, you know, for stuff. And she's like, I don't understand that. Like in this job where it's so instantaneous, that I feel like was very difficult for her. And she would just go to work and kind of sit in the corner and watch everybody go by until it was the end of the night. And she was like, I didn't make any money.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah, that's a very, very tough one. She might go into this thinking like, well, is each client like a lunar cycle? And it's like, no, I think you might have hopped a step in not waiting the lunar cycle to become a stripper.
Right. To really think about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And that, yeah. So she's since left the industry, which I feel like for her personally was better, just because it caused a lot of, she just didn't feel good enough and she didn't know how to navigate the club. And, you know, you really have to think about that. I think a lot of times we want, especially because we're so rare, reflectors and projectors, we see the generators and we see the manifestor generators in these settings. And that's what we aspire to be, right? Like, I want to be that girl who can just do it all. And you have to remember that they have a defined, so, you know, solar plexus. So they have a lot of that energy to give and we don't.
I think one of the other places in the body graph that would be really interesting for you to look at for different types of sex work would be the environments. The people that are meant to be in urban settings, so caves, markets, and kitchens people, they would do better at this job. Whereas people who are mountains, valleys, and shores, they don't do well in urban places, in more industrial places. They don't do well with high density. Mm-hmm. If you think about the, like, caves is a place where things are secure on the inside. Markets is a place of transaction. Kitchens is alchemy, many different things coming together. Those lower numbers are going to do way better. Like, if in an actual strip club, second and third color are going to do the best for environment, I would definitely think.
And where can you find, how do you know that?
Your design north and south node below the line level. I'll take a quick peek at the body. You don't have it. Okay. You don't have yours. I could run your chart after and give you an advanced one, but knowing your environment would be very cool. But you have a left environment. Your bottom left arrow, what it's actually called, is the independent design variable. The independent design variable, north node and south node. Yours is left facing, which means active in the environment. So when you're in the right environment, it stimulates you into the right kind of activity. Someone who is right facing here is someone who becomes pacified in their right environment. there are not too many successful strippers who are going to be pacified in the right environment. Like, this is definitely more of an active body
Very
expression.
much, yes. Very, very much. Like, and especially because we are using our bodies through dance, you know? And I always say, like, strip clubs tend to be so, like, everyone said, you know, and especially our strip club, like, it's haunted, right? It's not haunted. It's not haunted. Lots of weird things happen there. But it's because all of that energy, like, you have to remember, dance is a form of you know, aligning your chakras, and especially, like, if you're doing that from a you know, sexual place, right? And it's very sexual type dance. It's performing, and that a lot of people don't realize how that energy flow can create other energies, and then you're bringing in a ton of energies who, you know, may not be the lightest of energies, right? So you have a lot of people who are on the fringe of society. The more underground type people go in there. There's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of alcohol. So that brings a lot of energy into these spaces, whether it be good energy or bad energy. So I take a lot of my time to clear that energy out of there, right? So people laugh at me all the time because I'm going around there with my incense and my, you know, my sprays and my different types of, like, I always have my bag of, I call it my bag of tricks, and I go around that locker room, and every single one of those lockers I cleanse, right? Because I have to just really clear that energy out, or I'm not going to be able to be a part of it, you know? And that's, I've learned that, but it's fascinating how I came to this realization that, like, strip clubs and sex work environments, they're very spiritual environments. And a lot of the women that I work with are very spiritual women, believe it or not, who also have the same kind of, like, mindset as me, where that it's the energy and that energy flow. So if you're not in that mindset and you don't know who you are as a person, which I feel like human design can really help with, that inner work, figuring out who you are. And this goes for swinging as well, you know?
I think the group dynamic is an interesting thing to acknowledge, because you are you, the most you, when you're alone. Every time we bring someone else into the room, we have the connections that can happen. How many electromagnetics, the dominance, the compromise, the companionship. Every time you add more people to the room, you skew the energetics, and things change very much when you get to five people. Three to five is a penta. Then if you look at something like a wa, so let's say a group of 16 people or more, which is definitely strip club setting, this is very much like alchemical soup. Nobody is actually themselves in this setting, because nobody is alone. Everybody is connecting to everything around them. So I imagine you walking around the club as a projector, in a way, almost like stirring the soup, like moving ingredients around. Whereas I would look at some of the other types as being ingredients in the soup. Like, they are bigger energetic contributors to what's happening. Whereas your role isn't to provide the energy, it's to, like, transmute the energy into something else.
Yeah, that makes sense. And to use my energy to almost, like, help bring up the energy in a way. Like, yeah, I can see that for sure, especially when I interact not only with my coworkers, but with the people who are there. And then that's what draws people to me, is my aura and that good energy. But it takes a lot of work to get to that place, to be that person. You have to really know who you are as a person in order to make all of this work. And it's similar to a swinger setting, or you know, any sort of group setting that you're in, which swinger settings are typically always group settings. I'm that person. I'm not the orgy. Like, I don't get all the orgies together, right? Like, I don't lead that, but I can use my energy to kind of figure out, you know, what's right and what's wrong in those situations and what, how I feel comfortable and how I don't feel comfortable. So yeah, I mean, any kind of last words about sex work, swinging, non-monogamy when it relates to human design, and how can people find you, or like if they want to get an in-depth reading on their human design, how can they do that?
Okay, I think I'll close up with just continuing the end of that conversation, taking the person into the swinger setting. I think it's very cool. I'm a very experimental person. Being a third line profile, trial and error, trial and error. I will do things even if I don't think they're going to work out, just to see the outcome, just to see what doesn't work. So when you're alone, there's you. And let's think about sexuality for the solo person. Maybe that's your relationship to masturbation or your own sensuality, or you're exploring kinks. Who knows what you're up to when you're alone? Then there's you with a partner. We have one person to see, how do you bring out these other qualities in me? Then we go into a penta setting, group sex. We got 3 to 5 people. Who am I when I'm in a group? Do I get lost? Am I still recognized? Do I start to get really bitter as soon as I'm in a foursome because I'm no longer getting attention as a projector? Because projectors are one-to-one. As soon as we're outside of one-to-one, we can definitely get very bitter very quickly because it feels like either we're not getting enough attention or our partner gets very jealous because they're not getting their one-to-one attention. The jealousy dynamic with projectors in different open relationships, that's something people have to work through because they think they want to be open, but they really don't want to share us with anybody. So there's constant things to have to work through. Oh, that didn't work for me. Let's try again. Oh, that didn't work for me. Let's try again. I can understand that about myself with my conscious profile line. You know, if you're a fifth line as your conscious profile, it would help to know that people are always projecting things onto you. They're never actually seeing you clearly. They'll have a lot of assumptions about who you are and what you like. You know, if you're a first line, you probably have so many questions. You maybe brought the contract to the party, right? Like,
yeah,
you got
yep.
Crossing your T's, you know, like there are so many different aspects of your definition where you can see how they have an effect on how you'll show up intimately. And for me, people that want to find me, I'm on Instagram at Sam Zagar. I'm on YouTube at Sam Zagar Human Design. I have a podcast called A New Narrative, where I also talk about my own sex work history. The episode is called My Money Narrative. That's definitely, that was my first jump off the deep end into, I don't care who knows this stuff about me. And I will say, everybody in my life told me not to talk about it. They all said, don't talk about it. And when you mentioned you had a son, this, you know, that hit kind of close to home for me, because what people would say to me is, you don't want your son to grow up where people know what his mom used to do, and they alienate him and they pick on him or they say whatever it is because they don't approve of what you used to do. And I thought, wow, I can't believe someone is telling me to completely change my life in case some dude I've never fucking met has some opinion on my kid or whatever 10 years from now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that just doesn't seem like why I'm going to make my decisions. Fuck you, ex-boyfriend. And I went on my podcast and I told all of my deep secrets. And it was the most liberating thing I'd ever done. It was one of the most successful things I'd ever done. I felt so free afterwards because I'm not ashamed of what I did. If right. other people are ashamed of it, that's a them problem. And because of that, I get so many people reach out and be like, man, when I heard that about you, you seemed real, you seemed relatable. And those are some of my favorite clients to talk to. Yeah, I'm like A New Narrative, Sam Zagar. You can have a reading with me. It's on my website, samzagar.com.
Yeah, and we'll link all of that in the show notes. And yeah, if you guys want to get a hold of Sam, you know, do that. I mean, I think that it can be really helpful, whether you're a stripper, a sex worker, or a swinger, you're non-monogamous, whoever you are in this sex positive space. I think that getting a reading like that can really bring out a lot of the things that you need to know about yourself to start doing that inner work. Because this is, you know, both aspects of it. Anytime we're talking about sexuality, it's a lot of inner work. So I would recommend that. And thank you so much for coming on, Sam. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.